Wow, this sounds kind of problematic and pretty misogynistic.
Oh, yes. You want to talk about misogynistic? Let's talk about Joe Budden's Breathe for a second.
Okay.
With lyrics such as, I'm a wife beater, I don't need a tank top.
Oh, my God.
And how we going out to eat, I thought you ain't swallow.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
So, yeah, this game was rough and problematic for young Braxton to be playing, but young Braxton turned out fine.
The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the world's at least us. From landlines to smartphones, this is Gen Zex.
Gen
Zex. The culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
And hey, buddy.
Hello.
It's, No, we did record last week. No, we're still current.
We're still current. We're just late on this one, depending on when it goes out.
No, it's going out. It's going out tomorrow.
Oh, cool. Sweet. Yeah, then we're good.
Yeah, we are good. I just, I forgot that when we recorded nothing last week, you and I still recorded something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Yeah, last week got just really fucking crowded and busy and everything was bad and...
Yeah.
But here we are.
We're here and we're here to talk about stuff.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I've been, and I know people that listen to the shows are going to be sick of me talking about it, but I've been watching a lot of World Cup. I watched Portugal just fucking own their game first thing this morning at 11, 5-0. I just watched England whiff it for a 0-0 tie. Very exciting game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of chances, a lot of fucking around, but Ghana held their own. I was really hoping that England would win and secure their place in the knockout round, but instead, they're going to have to worry about the next game, their next game next week. So, but other than that, yeah, the United States is kicking some ass.
Yeah, I saw we won against Australia.
Yep. 2-0.
Yeah, I saw the video of the crowd singing. Country Roads, Take Me Home.
It's nice. What
it was very fun.
What's more fun is listening to the other countries do chants.
Oh yeah.
Especially about Trump.
Yes, those are very funny. I've been all over TikTok and people have been calling it World Sleepover.
Yeah.
2026.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like seeing some of those videos of I think it was the Glasgow fans.
Oh, the Tartan Army, yeah.
Yeah, how like just respectful they were, and they like cleaned up their trash. And it's makes me wish I lived in a cooler city.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That was, I mean, one of the memes I read today was it's like you have all these people coming from all over the world and falling in love with these American cities. And they're all big liberal bastions,
mm-hmm.
You know, and none of these, you know, these cities are for the most part, you know, the ones that Republicans like, except mm-hmm. for maybe Dallas.
Yeah. If this experience teaches us anything, it's that politicians are the problem.
Yes, I will absolutely agree with that. I will. So, all right. I believe you, sir, are going first today.
Yes, yes.
What do you got for me?
All right. We're going to go back to April of 2003.
Okay.
U.S. forces seized control of Baghdad on April 9th, pulling down a statue of Saddam Hussein. I remember seeing pictures of that in history class, and I think playing an analog of that in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4.
Okay. I remember that as well.
Let's see. Scientists announced the successful completion of the Human Genome Project on April 14th, mapping 99% of the human genome.
Nice.
Microsoft officially released Windows Server 2003 on April 24th.
Huh.
The Dixie Chicks posed nude on the cover of Entertainment Weekly, protesting the backlash against a comment made against President George W. Bush.
I do remember that as well.
Top songs of April 2003 had 50 Cent's In Da Club topping, I believe, for 5 weeks.
Yikes.
At number one.
That is a long time.
Yeah. Other songs include All I Have by Jennifer Lopez featuring LL Cool J, Rock Your Body by Justin Timberlake, and Ignition by R. Kelly. Rough.
I know none of those.
I know most of those. The only one I'm not super familiar with is Ignition, but that's because I've never really liked R. Kelly.
No, me either. And then it turned out to be, you know, precognizant.
Vindicated.
Yeah.
Top movies of April 2003 saw Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, the biggest film of the year globally. Finding Nemo just released after April in May, so kind of, becoming a 2003 blockbuster.
Okay.
Adam Sandler and Jack Nicholson team up in April for Anger Management. And in the world of video games, on April 1st, 2003, Electronic Arts, EA Canada, and AKI Corporation released Def Jam Vendetta.
Okay. Now, you told me this is what we were going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I'll just pop over to Steam, download this, and give it a go.
Nope.
Not so fast, sir.
This is unfortunately locked to the PlayStation 2.
Mm-hmm.
I believe if you have a very early, like a first generation PlayStation 3, you can play it on that with the PlayStation 2 disc.
Okay.
But they got away. They did away with backwards compatibility after the first one because it lowered the cost.
Yeah.
But I believe this is the video game I have played the most in my life.
That is nuts.
I love this game so much, just because it was when I was starting to kind of like, I guess, form memories.
Okay.
Was when I played this game, because I played this game in probably around, 2005, 2006 is when I started playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it because my dad played it, and my dad played it because he liked the music that was in the game. My dad was a big rap fan.
Okay.
Still is to this day. And so I got into it because my dad got into it. And I think this is one of the things that really made me appreciate music. So much so that I believe, Focus by Joe Budden is one of the possible opening songs that can play in this. And that is just forever tied to this game. Like, I can't listen to that song without thinking of this game.
Okay.
But it's a fighting game. It's kind of like the older WWE games,
mm-hmm.
with a little bit more like flair put into it. There's like special moves you can do called blazing moves. The basic plot is the player, you can choose one of four Street Fighters, Briggs, a dishonorably discharged soldier, Proof, an ex super bike racer,
okay.
Tank, a massive Japanese fighter, and the DJ Spider. It does not matter who you choose. The story is the same for all of them.
Okay.
It's basically, they just all have different stats. I believe I always chose Proof because he had the best mix of fast and strong. Because I think Spider was all the way fast, Tank was all the way strong, and Briggs was kind of like a middleman on everything.
Huh.
After you select your fighter, you get called up by your friend Manny, by taking, to help out, you're supposed to take his place in a street fight. So like he got scheduled for a street fight and then couldn't make it. So he had to call his friend to take his place.
Okay. I love it.
After you complete a certain number of fights, you fight the rapper Scarface. So the rappers were actually like players. You could unlock them as playable characters in this game.
Okay.
Once you defeat him, you get their your first girlfriend, Deja. yeah. Other girls come up to the protagonist every couple fights. Eventually, you choose one of them to be their new girlfriend, and then they all fight each other.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I mean, I get the music. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at D-Mob's crew, and I'm recognizing a lot of names.
Yeah.
Of some, you know, pretty famous rap fellas.
Mm-hmm. Rap gentlemen.
Yeah. And, wow, this sounds kind of problematic and pretty misogynistic.
Oh, yes. A lot of, you want to talk about misogynistic. Let's talk about Joe Budden's Breathe for a second.
Okay.
With lyrics such as, I'm a wife beater, I don't need a tank top.
Oh, my God.
And how we going out to eat, I thought you ain't swallow.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
So, yeah, this game was rough and problematic for young Braxton to be playing, but young Braxton turned out fine because he liked the music.
That's fair. Which, I mean, mine was, you know, before other games came that were bigger and more in-depth and all that, I'd say my most played game for years was Duke Nukem.
Okay, and that makes sense.
Duke Nukem is insanely problematic, but the gameplay was fun.
You know? Yeah, and so innovative for its time.
Yeah, it was 3D, but everything looked like it was made out of, you know, 2D 8-bit blocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a lot of resolution in it. And, I mean, I played the hell out of that game.
Time. It's a great game.
Yeah.
Still holds up. This game, I don't believe, holds up if you're not a fan of it.
Okay.
Because a lot of the stuff is like, obviously, a lot of the game is super dated, and that extends into the graphics and the controls. And,
yeah.
But still, like, whenever I'm going through a hard time or I'm feeling sad, I'll turn on the PlayStation 2 and I'll play some Def Jam Vendetta for a little bit.
Kind of cheer yourself back up.
Yeah. After your girlfriend, all your the other girls fight each other. Nor challenges the protagonist to a fight at Grimyville in Lafrak City, Queens, New York City.
Okay.
You arrive, nearly get into a fight with D-Mob, played by Chris Judge, who is Kratos.
Stargate.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played Teal'c in Stargate. He's got a great voice.
Oh, he does. Not long after the fight, Manny signs himself up as the and the protagonist for a tag team tournament. After that, you get challenged by Ludacris to fight in Club Luda. Afterwards, D-Mob claims the protagonist and Manny are nothing, adding if anyone in the club wants power and respect, they must beat him at the Def Jam tournament. DMX challenges the protagonist, but he must first overcome the Dragon's House offer. You fight Method Man and Red Man in tag team tournament finale. The protagonist fights DMX receives an email from his girlfriend Angel, who was taken by D-Mob, saying they need to talk. When they arrive at the Face Club, it is revealed that D-Mob sent House, Pockets, and Snowman to stop them from coming from the Def Jam tournament. All of these people are just like throwaway henchmen.
Yeah.
The one thing you really gain from this story is it means nothing. You don't care about the characters. You're there for the fighting.
I mean, most fighting games are like that. Hell, even Injustice, it's like, the first time I played it, it was, I got to play Batman because it's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, yeah, you just kind of figure out that there's other guys with more different stuff. And so you end up playing more of them. But, I mean, this sounds like a fucking passing, you know, the pot around the room fever dream.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys in there happened to be a programmer.
Oh yeah.
It was like a bunch of rappers telling a story, and he's just like, I could fucking make bank on this. I wonder if he did. I wonder how many copies of this actually sold. I'm looking.
I believe it was, when I looked at the stats last night, I believe it was like the 89th highest selling game in April. Of 2003.
That's not a big seller.
No, not do well. Let's see. The protagonist defeats House Pockets and Snowman, but Manny knocks him out and joins D-Mob against his will. Waking up, the protagonist enters a tournament, defeats their best fighters. D-Mob attempts to shoot the protagonist, but Manny takes the bullet and survives.
Okay.
The protagonist triumphs over D-Mob, gets Angel back. As the protagonist walks out to make amends with Manny, D-Mob is arrested. And then that leads directly into the sequel, Def Jam Fight for New York.
Okay. Was that as good?
I did not play a ton of that one because I didn't own that one as a kid.
Yeah.
I've allegedly played emulators of it. But... it's fun. They got more rappers for that one. I think they even got like some updated names. Def Jam.
Cause I'm looking at the stats, and Def Jam Vendetta
mm-hmm.
sold less than 2 million copies across the PlayStation 2 and Nintendo GameCube.
Yeah.
So
Def Jam Fight for New York. The sequel has really become kind of like a cult classic. I think if you have a copy of it on PS2, the secondary market, I think it's around like $130.
Def Jam Fight for New York sold approximately 2.5 million copies across PlayStation 2, Xbox, and GameCube.
Yeah, so with one more console, it did what? Close to 500 million more, or not
500,000. Yeah.
500,000. So yeah, it's, that one is, the gameplay on that one is really good.
Okay.
And I mean, for that one, let's see, they got Flavor Flav, Henry Rollins. I believe most of the, original crew returned. Trying to see who else they added. Yeah, it just looks like most of the original crew. They added Flavor Flav. They added Freeway. Eric Sermon.
I don't know any of these names.
Who else did they add? Oh, yeah, because there's two crews. And this one, oh, yeah, Snoop Dogg's in this one.
Okay, I know that name.
Snoop Dogg plays Crow. Fat Joe was in it, but he played a guy named Crack.
Why don't they... looking at the first list, why aren't they playing as themselves?
Some of them do, some of them don't. At least from what I remember.
Because I'm looking, Ludacris, he's himself. Joe Budden, whom I don't know, himself. Funkmaster Flex, who I know, himself. Ghostface Killa. Himself, DMX himself.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then like Busta Rhymes plays Magic in the second one. Snoop Dogg plays Crow. Yeah, this one have Warren G exhibit. And then there was a third one called Def Jam Icon.
Okay.
On the PS3. If I remember correctly... That one had a lawsuit against him.
Okay.
Let's see. They will fail to stop.
Oh, my. Def Jam Icon 2007 was a commercial failure at 300,000 to 500,000 copies across PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bad game. It, from what I remember, the gameplay wasn't that good. The only cool part about it is the background would react to the music that would play. So it was like the deeper the base was or the more base there was, the more the buildings would jump around and then the buildings would collapse. And
so it was like a screensaver.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a real, it was a screensaver marketed as a full game.
Okay. Okay.
But okay. This one didn't have any like lawsuits against it. I think I'm thinking of something else, but yeah, this game failed. It was just not good. But yeah, I think that's really all I've got on Def Jam Vendetta. It's just, I remember playing this game so much. My little sister used to play with me.
Aww.
And she would lose and then she would cry.
Mm. It's, sisters.
It's her own fault, you know? She picks the same character every time.
Yep.
You got to counter. What are we doing here? But yeah, this game will always, if I had to like rank games, I think of all time, this game would probably be close to my number one.
Okay.
Just because of how many like just good memories are associated with it.
I liked Duke Nukem 3D so much when it came out, even with all the problematic bits and pieces to it, that some of his sayings I had as sound events on my computer back when we used to do that. Now I turn all sound events off on my computer because I don't want to hear the fucking noises, you know. But back then, yeah, you'd turn my computer on and the THX noise would start up.
My Steam Deck has like custom startup sounds, and I think that's about the only thing I have like sounds, like background sounds enabled for.
Yeah, because who wants it?
Yeah,
it's the same thing. Is it's like I the only reason I have a ringer on my phone is because sometimes my kids call me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise who's calling me? Nobody calls me.
Yeah, mine is on vibrate always.
Yep. Yeah, it's my sleep schedules and my children's sleep schedules are vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in bed by 10 o'clock at night and I'm up at 4:30 in the morning. That's my life right now. My kids, they go to bed 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Sometimes Kyla, who's working overnights, doesn't get to bed till 9 in the morning. You know, 10 in the morning, that kind of thing. And so, when they need help and they call, I need noises. You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's the only reason my ringer is on, because when the kids were still at home, you know, I went to bed, I went to do not disturb.
Mm-hmm.
So only they will ring through.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Yeah, I think I have that set up for like my parents and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise, fuck, man. This phone is here for me to read books on.
The phone is an evil brick that makes me angry the longer I'm on it.
It is. And I just remember how excited I was to get my first cell phone so I could make calls in the car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I had my car accident that broke my neck, it was one of these those original bricks that the couple who pulled over to help me out. After, by the way, lying on the ground in a bloody puddle for almost 20 minutes as people just kept on driving by.
Oh, yeah, because was that on the motorcycle, or was that was when you were in your...
I was in my Toyota Corolla, my 1985 Toyota Corolla, that got hit so hard that I have joked that it turned into a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, because it got hit by the International Harvester?
Yes, 1972 three-quarter ton International Harvester farm pickup.
Yeah, and then didn't she leave?
Yeah. Yeah, her car took so little damage that she fled the scene in her car.
Just literally, like, left you to die.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, my legs didn't work, and I was just there, but she was drunk and knew she had to leave or she was going to get a DUI.
Probably so, worse.
What's funny is what I'm about to tell you about on my half involves that fucking car accident.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I'll save I'll save the rest of that for my turn.
Yeah. I think I'm ready to go to that. I think that's all I have to say on.
Well, do you still like fighting games like this?
Oh yeah.
Or is this a one off?
No, I mean I still play like this. I mean, me and my friends have this kind of tradition where every time a new WWE game comes out, one of us will buy it. And then we all go over to that friend's place and play it. And I think that's the only time we play them.
Okay.
But it's something we've been doing for so long that we just do it.
Because Injustice was infuriating enough to me that I only bought Injustice. I never bought the sequel.
The sequel's good.
That's what I hear.
The story in that one's really good.
Yeah.
No, I still love fighting games. I haven't played any recently because I don't like playing them unless they have like a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I won't really play them by myself.
Yeah.
I'll usually play them with friends. I think the only exception to that is like Smash Bros. Like I'll play Smash Bros. By myself.
Okay.
I still love fighting games.
Yeah, I'm a first person shooter guy.
That's fair. That's definitely my go to.
Yeah.
Is FPS, but I'll also do like third person. Like I've been playing the Resident Evil 2 remake.
Oh, how is
it? It's good. It's so good. It lives up to the hype. I'm playing them in order, but I'm skipping Resident Evil 1 because I don't want to do tank controls and I don't want to do that perspective.
Yeah.
So I started with Resident Evil 2 and then I got the Resident Evil 3 and 4 remake. So I'm gonna do those next.
No, it's always, I mean, I look at games now, you know, I think Sniper Elite is probably my favorite shooter right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it doesn't give you enough opportunities to be a sniper.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I do that. And then I go back to combat games like Street Fighter, stuff like that. Never really hooked me. You know,
okay.
They weren't, I don't know why. And I think that's why I found, you know, the DC game so frustrating. Mm-hmm. Injustice was, it's just, you know, the player versus player, even if you're playing the computer kind of thing. It's console.
Yep.
And I have old man thumbs and I don't console controller very well. I'm a keyboard guy.
No, that's fair. Yeah, when I play fighting games, I will only use a controller. I have a blue Xbox controller specifically for my PC.
Mine is black.
Oh, nice.
But what I need right now, I'll be honest with you, let me pull up my inventory real quick, is a joystick.
Okay.
I bought...
You're talking to do flight sims? Or?
Yes.
Okay. That's cool.
Where is this game? It's a Star Wars.
It's a Rogue Squadron.
Star Wars Squadrons?
Oh, Squadrons is good.
Yeah.
That's the older one, isn't it?
But it's when is this one from?
Is that the one I'm thinking of? Oh, Squadrons is the one I'm thinking of. Okay. Yeah. That one's from like 2018?
2025. Oh, wait. No, that's just the last time I played it. 2020. And I've tried playing it with the fucking console controller. I have tried playing it keyboard. And it's just like, you need a joystick to play this game.
No, yeah.
It is a true flight simulator.
I played that on controller and I remember liking it.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be more fun. Like, yeah, I get that. I've been playing Forza 6. And that one has me wanting to buy a racing wheel.
Oh, no shit, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love a racing sim.
Oh yeah, just like even just a wheel and maybe like a shifter and then the pedals. Like I don't need like a huge thing.
But wouldn't you like one?
I would love one.
Yeah. So,
but those are like we're going on like I'll never have that kind of money.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I mean, it wasn't my generation that broke everything, but I sometimes think that while we were protesting things, we didn't protest enough things. You know? No, I mean, we only came out for the big stuff.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, it'll trickle down any day now.
That wasn't me. That was the boomers.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I know whose fault it is.
Yeah, because that one, I remember I was in fourth grade, maybe fifth grade. And we were doing the vote in school to see who you would vote for, and I was the only kid in my class that didn't vote for Reagan. You know? So it was like Reagan 23, I think it was Dukakis, 1. And that was me.
Solitary Dukakis voter.
Yep. That was me. He put on that little helmet and looked like a little mushroom guy, and nobody voted for him. And it used to be that you could be embarrassed out of politics, but no longer. That is no longer a thing.
Now, if you have a controversy, you're promoted.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to travel to the 90s.
Let's.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America, $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You can find more information at theleftshow.com. So it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had just driven a friend home and was on my way back to where I was staying. Mm-hmm. And I was staying in the basement of an ex-girlfriend that I was still very, very tight with, whom I still just adore to this day. When we went out to Denver for my buddy's funeral a couple of years back, we got together with my ex, you know, and my mm-hmm. wife and her husband, and just sat down and had a ball. We check in with each other every couple of months, make sure we're doing okay, that sort of thing. So that explains why what's about to happen happened. So I stopped at a place called Good Burger that made good burgers, and I got a bacon double cheeseburger. I was really excited about. They had spicy fries, which I was really excited about and was nibbling on as I was driving back to the house, that kind of thing. And I went through an intersection on a green light. I was going about 40 miles an hour. And a young lady named Colleen, I won't say her last name because I'm not an asshole, ran the red light. And she was going upwards of 70 miles an hour. I was in a 1985 Toyota Corolla. She was in a 1972 three-quarter ton International Harvester farm pickup. So it wasn't just a pickup. It was a pickup with all of the steel added after. You know, so it had this just gigantic bumper that somebody had welded, you know, at a half-inch steel plates. She hit me, she T-boned me, and turned my car, as I have said many times to people that listen to shows that we record, it turned my little Toyota, turned it into a motorcycle. I broke my knee. I dislocated my right leg. I messed up my elbow, my shoulder. I cracked my head open. Everything. I mean, the whole right side of my body was just a mess. And I broke my neck in 14 places. So my legs didn't work. And she stopped and came over to the car. And I really couldn't do anything. When the car stopped spinning and rolling, it did land on its tire, so I wasn't upside down, which was pretty cool. That's about the only cool thing. And I just kind of, in my head, after having watched too much TV my whole life, I'm like, car's going to explode. And so I tried to get out of the car and make a run for it. And because my legs didn't work, I just fell flat, you know, down on my face. And she came over. I am literally, I've seen the picture, just covered in blood because my head is just... And she says, are you okay? And I said, I don't think so. And she's like, okay. Do you want my insurance information? And I was like, okay. Now, this is back before everybody had a cell phone. Cell phones weren't a thing. So I couldn't be like, fuck you, call me an ambulance. You know, it was just like, yeah, I guess we can do that until somebody calls an ambulance. I don't know. You know, what the fuck? And she reached into the car and did something for a minute. And then came out and was writing on something. And I couldn't see what it was because there was blood in my eyes. And then she handed it to me and said, okay. And left.
Jesus.
You know, she went and got in her truck. No, I forgot. Just to add insult to injury, she went and got in her truck. She started it up. She drove about 15 feet. She stopped. She got out. She came back to me and she says, do you have any kind of a wrench or a pair of pliers? She's like, you know,
are you kidding me?
No. She's like, my bumper's dragging a little bit. And I'm like, you know what?
I'm dying.
Fuck you, lady. No, I don't. She's like, okay. She stumbles back to the car. She leaves. I'm laying on the ground. I got my back up against the car. I'm bleeding everywhere. And cars are going by and nobody's stopping. Right? Mm-hmm. And finally this couple stopped and they had one of those big brick cell phones. And I, of course, being who I am, was like, please call me a taxi. And they called the cops and the cops called an ambulance. I told the cops, I'm like, call me a taxi. I can't afford an ambulance. And they called an ambulance. Which, by the way, if they put you in an ambulance and you've asked to not be put in an ambulance, I don't know if this is true in Utah, but in Colorado, you don't have to pay for that ambulance.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, because you were put in there against your will. I don't know if that's still a thing. It sounds like something lobbyists would have gotten rid of a long time ago. But
oh, I'm sure.
Anyway, one thing leads to another. I spend almost 40 hours in the hospital, you know, They're pretty sure my legs are going to work again. Yada, yada, yada. Things are just bad. And I reach into the pocket of my coat to get her insurance information to share it with the police officer that came to talk to me at the hospital. And she had written her name, number, and insurance company on a collectible X-Files trading card.
Cool.
I was livid. All of the pain, all of the indignity, all of the terror, all of that. And I'm like, you wrote on a collectible? I know how much fucking paper is in my glove box, and you grabbed the one goddamn thing that not only made it hard to read, but the only thing in the glove box that I wouldn't want written on, you wrote on. So you broke my neck and you fucked up my X-Files card. Because the week of September 10th, 1993, which is how I was supposed to start this, International Relations, the Clinton administration announced it was resuming U.S. talks with the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO, paving the way for a historic peace accord signing at the White House that has come to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
September 10th, boxing superstar Julio Cesar Chavez put his 87-0 undefeated record on the line against Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker at the Alamo Dome. Ended in a majority draw. Markets were buzzing with shifting interest rates as Germany led a push to lower borrowing costs across Europe, and a major reorganization of the major baseball divisions was approved by team owners. Publications in the tech world were beginning to warn about the looming Y2K software bug. Editors of,
I would love to see a disaster movie where Y2K just happened. Like one made now.
Yeah. Like the electric grid crashes.
Mm-hmm.
I truly
planes
believe
falling out of the sky.
Yeah, I really do. I truly believe, because there was a lot of work around Y2K going in and fixing shit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had my MCSE at that point for Windows 3.11 and did some hired work, you know, as an MS-DOS programmer to go in and do some date changes and stuff like that, just because, you know, I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
A couple bucks here, a couple bucks there, that kind of thing. And yeah, but Y2K was, I mean, it was a big panic and a lot of people worked on systems and then nothing bad happened. Everybody's like, see, I truly believe that people working on the systems kept the systems from dying.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. You know,
yeah, that's fair.
And that the fact that nothing happened should be viewed as a good thing, but that Americans are pretty fucking dumb sometimes. And they're like, well, since nothing bad happened, it was pointless. We all worried over nothing. And it's like, or you worried just enough and we fixed the problem before it blew up the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I am on Y2K. But yeah, I think it would be funny to have a technological dark zone because of Y2K story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that'd be pretty fucking funny. Or serious. I don't know. You could do it. But on September 10th, 1993, the X-Files made its television debut on the Fox network, back before they were evil, introducing viewers to agents Fox Mulder and Dana Scully. I, to this day, but back then, had an unhealthy crush on Gillian Anderson. To the point.
Yeah, I had a big crush on Scully. When I first watched this series.
Yeah. Short, cute, redhead, smart. You know, what's not to like? But we started filming a documentary called Looking for Gillian, where we were going to drive to Vancouver and try to take her to dinner. Three of us.
Mm-hmm.
Just fans. We were just like, you know what? We'll drive to Vancouver. We'll drive around. We'll see if we can find her. We'll see if she'll let us buy her dinner. That was the point of the documentary. the van that we had made it from Denver to Grand Junction before it fucking died. It just fucking died. And we had to get somebody to drive to Grand Junction, which is a 4.5 hour drive from Denver, give or take, mm-hmm. to come and pick us up and take us back to Denver. So, I mean, Gillian Anderson was a very serious thing. But watching that first episode, even though when I rewatch the first season now, they're all kind of silly little monster of the week bits.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's got kind of not really the same feel, but like the kind of the same formula as like Ultraman.
Yeah. I would never have put those two together, but you're right. So you're looking at what we were looking at the beginning was the Monster of the Week episodes. It felt like, and Chris Carter, the showrunner, was dropping little hints as to the ongoing mythology, you know, of government cover-ups and aliens,
mm-hmm.
right? And that turned into a huge mythology that continued well past David Duchovny leaving the series and coming back for a minute.
Yeah.
But one of the things that made it different was it was premier television or prestige television before prestige television was a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we were used to long running westerns, maybe a mystery show, you know, and today we're used to long running mysteries and season spanning plots. But in 1993, that was new. And
okay.
when you look at what came after, like Lost, like Fringe, like 2004's Battlestar Galactica, you know, like Strange, there's a puppy. Hi, buddy.
Yeah, he's getting mad at something.
Yeah. You know, these all exist because the X-Files was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the truth is out there. It was a growing concern of the people that live here that you really can't change, you know, or trust the government. You know,
oh, yeah.
We'd had Vietnam, we'd had Watergate, we'd had Iran-Contra, you know, and they were getting more and more secretive around the intelligence agencies, which they've continued to do. You know, because mm-hmm. who knows what the fuck the NSA is up to anymore. You know?
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, watching this for the first time, I mean, I grew up with a dad who didn't trust the government. My dad was always, and still is, big into, like, conspiracy theories and stuff like that. And so I grew up, like, believing in, like, UFOs and cryptids and stuff like that. And so, it was very cool to watch this series and be like, yeah, I also don't trust the government.
Yeah. Yep. The leads were both super intelligent, mm-hmm. you know, because usually you had a smart one and a dumb one, you know, or a couple of just regulars. But yeah. In this one, Mulder and Scully were both wicked smart in their own ways, in their own directions, you know. It was a really good devil's advocate relationship, mm-hmm. as Mulder believed the fantastical and Scully believed the scientific, and they both had their beefs with each other's thing.
Yeah, and I feel like the series kind of set that that character archetype, like a precedent for like the skeptic and the believer.
Yes. Yes. Well, I don't know for sure, but I don't recall. You know, maybe the Odd Couple, if we're in a stretch. Scully was a scientist, a doctor, an FBI agent, and the skeptic. And at that time, female characters were always sidekicks or romantic interests. And no matter where they went or what they did, she was usually the smartest person in the room. which I really, really liked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was very, very cool to see that from the writing, especially from the time. Because, like, I'm looking at the IMDb and, like, Scully's in more episodes than Mulder is. And, that, you know, because Mulder left.
Yeah. Yep. And I even liked... Oh, I can't remember her character name, but Annabeth Gish kind of replaced Scully when Scully was kidnapped and disappeared for a season or so.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert, what's his name, played Doggett, the Terminator.
Yeah, Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick. And they were okay. You know, I didn't like him as much as Mulder and Scully, but I still enjoyed the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun. Now... trying to think about how to put this, but when we talk about not trusting the government, a lot of the reasons that I don't started by watching this show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cigarette smoking man. I was working for politicians at the time, and none of them were that bad, but they always seemed to have someone that felt that bad hanging around with them.
Yeah, evil advisor.
Yes.
Kind of vibe.
Yep. Yep. It it explored governmental distrust before it became the current cultural crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, X-Files was exploring that tension years before we got to where we are now. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But one of the things that I liked about it was not only did it tell people not to trust authority, it also warned about believing things without evidence, and the dynamic between Mulder and Scully continually challenged blind faith and blind skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both had their issues. They both were flawed. One believed too much to the left, one believed too much to the right, you know, and we kept finding comfort in the ambiguity of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many episodes that ended without a fucking answer. And that let people that were watching it kind of come up with their own explanations, you know, to wrestle with their own uncertainties rather than getting that Hollywood ending, that happy ending or that explained ending that still to this day so many TV shows feel, you know, important.
Yeah, it's, I think that's kind of something that's like, it's coming back around, but I feel like for a while it was kind of lost where it's like, not everything needs to have a clear-cut answer.
Not everything has a clear-cut answer.
Yeah. Sometimes things are just weird and that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Because it's, I would say before X-Files, you know, the goofiest show that kind of had that, Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
Twin Peaks, yeah. has always, when I think about shows and I think about my favorite shows and I put them into their little boxes where I watch shows that are like one another, you know, Twin Peaks and the X-Files live in the same box.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
Without the X-Files, we wouldn't have true crime investigation podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Seriously. And if it weren't for Coast to Coast, I don't know if you ever listened to Coast, the old Art Bell show.
I love Coast to Coast.
You know, it was around the time of the X-Files that I was listening to Coast every night.
Mm-hmm.
The only time Coast to Coast ever gave me any sort of chill was the Sasquatch scream. Because mm-hmm. I still to this day don't know what the fuck was screaming, and whatever it was not in a very good mood.
Oh, yeah. Mine is that call. I can't remember if it was Art Bell or if it was later with Nori. But it was the dude who said he worked at like an underground facility and he was like sobbing on the phone, and then the call dies in the middle of like him talking, and mm-hmm. the power to their studio also went out at the same time.
Yeah. I think that was Whitley Strieber.
Was that Strieber that called?
No, I think it was him that took the call.
Oh, that was took the call.
But I do remember something like that with Art Bell as well. Art Bell is a distant relative. And I once reached out to him I just wanted an autograph or something. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. It's been a minute. And so I wrote a letter and let him know that we were related and this and that and the other, and that I'd be coming through that part of Nevada. And, you know, maybe we could meet. I could take him to lunch, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not a peep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I was thinking maybe my letter would stick out because it wouldn't be as weird as all the other ones he gets. But
well, I imagine when you run a radio show about like not trusting the government, getting a letter that's like, hey, we're related, can I meet you for lunch?
That's fair. I should have been able to bridge that gap myself. Yeah. But no, if you go back and watch the X-Files with a few caveats because of the time, you know, I mean, Christ, they were still using payphones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not about UFOs, monsters, and government conspiracies. It's about two people with different viewpoints on the world trying to understand the complications that they're in the middle of. You know, Mulder represents hope that there's mm-hmm. a larger truth waiting to be discovered, and Scully represents the discipline required to separate fact from Mulder's wishful thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, as far as I'm concerned, Mulder was proved right several times throughout the series. And in the movie, the first movie,
mm-hmm.
when, I don't know, he rescues Scully from a spaceship.
Maybe this spooky Mulder guy is onto something.
Yeah. Yeah, because I still remember that. And I was just like, he goes in, they figure out it's a spaceship, and I'm like, she comes conscious right after it flies away. And then 2 minutes later, she comes conscious right after it flies away. What happened? Mm-hmm. You didn't see the spaceship? No, there's no such thing as spaceships, Mulder. And you're just like, God damn it.
Livid.
Yeah. Because it comes down to, so it was still appointment television. It was Friday nights and I was in my 20s mm-hmm. and it came on it came on at 7:00. I'd finish it at 8:00 and I needed to be to the bar by 9:00 to work my bartender or my bouncer shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I worked nights into the overnight, and because, you know, Friday's a big bouncer night.
Yeah.
And that was the deal that I had because I was the floor manager at the bar I was working at the time, was everybody's got to be here at 7:00. I'll be here at 8:30.
Got to watch the X-Files.
Well, I got to fill out all the paperwork and talk to the cops after. So, you know, we'll balance that out. You know, on Saturday nights, I was there early, but on Friday mm-hmm. nights, yeah, I did not come in unless the X-Files was in reruns. I did not come in before 8:30.
Well, I mean, got to.
Yeah. Yeah, it was important. But that's just it. I will throw the X-Files on from time to time when I can't find anything else to watch. I'll just go, fuck it, I'll watch the X-Files.
Mine's the opposite. Whenever I start watching something new, around like 3-4 episodes in, my brain is just like, you could be watching the X-Files right now.
Nice.
And then I just go turn on the X-Files.
I dig it. Okay, so to round this up, since we're coming to the end of the hour, Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose, season 3, episode 4. That was the one where Peter Boyle showed up as a psychic who can only see how people die. And he made the autoerotic asphyxiation joke to Mulder. And I remember in the room of people that we were watching the show with, I was the only one that laughed. Because Michael Hutchins hadn't died yet. So nobody knew what that was, but I, you know, I figured I used context clues. I was like, autoerotic. Oh, asphyxie. Oh, that's a weird thing to do and a hell of a way to die.
A hell of a way to go.
Home, season 4, episode 2. Fucked up episode.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that one. That one's rough.
Yep. Yep, that one was the inbred family in rural Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Creepy fucking episode. Anasazi, The Blessing Way, and Paperclip. Season 2, episode 25, and season 3, episodes 1 and 2, was the multi-part mythological epic that cracked open the government cover-up, the alien DNA, and the syndicate's secrets. That was a really, really good one. And I remember how hooked I was going out of season 2 and how upset I was that it was the end of the season and a cliffhanger. And then when season 3, episode 1, was also a fucking cliffhanger and I had to wait another week, I was not happy.
Oh, yeah. Fair. Mm-hmm. I think the one that always sticks with me is season 3, episode 1, Squeeze.
Oh!
Eugene Toombs.
Toombs.
Yeah.
Yeah, he popped up at the end of that season, too, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you, this is kind of on topic. Have you seen the X-Files Lego set?
No.
It got greenlit through... whatever the community vote thing. I can't remember what it's called. Ideas. Yeah, just look it up. It's on the Lego Ideas website.
Oh, it's coming out this year.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, what do we got? $200, 1,500 pieces. Minifigures expected to include Mulder, Scully, Skinner, a gray alien, and fan favorite monsters and villains. I'm guessing one of them's Toombs.
Yes.
Okay. I want to see.
Yeah. If you go to it's like the first link when you search the X-Files Lego. Uh-huh. It's the Lego Ideas page. You can see some close-up shots of it. You can see Toombs in a vent.
Lego right there. Let's see. Oh, that's neat. It's Mulder's office and a forest set all on top of one another.
Yeah, with the big UFO on the top. Set.
Yeah. Wow. I want it.
Yeah. And you got like the I Want to Believe poster in the background. I have that. That poster is in my bedroom.
All right. Let's see. Gray Alien, Jersey Devil, Syndicate Leader, and Eugene Toombs. Oh, I love it. That's brilliant. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I will probably be buying this day one. This is amazing.
Oh, there's Toombs in the event. Oh, okay. I love it. I like that the cigarette smoking man doesn't have a cigarette.
Yeah, well, if they did a Lego cigarette,
that'd be pretty big.
First set have to go in the claw. A cigarette.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. Oh, I want it. I haven't even built any of the Lego I currently own, and I still want this.
Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
What was the one, I can't remember, where they ran into the hacker? The young lady with a lot of eye makeup?
Oh. Oh, man. I can't remember what episode that is.
Yeah, I don't either. I remember liking that one, and I don't remember where it is or what it is, and it's been too long since I've watched it. I need to go back and do it.
Kill Switch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Called. I like that one. And then Bad Blood. Remember Bad Blood? It was season 5, episode 12?
I believe so, yeah.
Where it was like a carnival full of vampires.
Yeah.
And it was Mulder and Scully both telling their version of the story. And every time Mulder told the story, the sheriff was a bucktooth idiot. And every time that Scully told the story, he was just handsome and charming.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. That was a fun little piece of storytelling. But I mean, it still tracks. It's still a good fucking show.
Oh yeah, to this day, it's still, even if you've never seen it before, it is worth watching.
Yeah, just get used to the 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you get used to it quick. The show is so engaging, I don't even notice anymore.
Yep. When does that switch? In season 6? It goes to HD?
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I got, buddy. X-Files.
X-Files, a greatest show of all time.
I can't go that far with you, but I'm right there with you. It's in my top 5.
I will say it's like my number 1.
Nice. Nice. Well, let's take a little break. Let's end the free show and invite everybody over to join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia, where every week that we record, we upload some special content to Patreon. If you're part of our Patreon family, you can hear it. And it's usually pretty good, and that's where most of the swear words happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we save those for the after show.
For the after show. I call it the after school special.
I saw that. Yeah, I get the notifications on the Patreon.
Nice. Nice. All right, buddy. Well, thanks for recording with me this week.
Yeah, thank you for having me again. It was always fun.
You bet. And thank you guys for listening. All things being equal, as long as the world doesn't burn down or the algae bloom, grow a conscience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's where the first ever kaiju is coming from.
Yeah, it's coming out of the reflecting pool. It's going to be very, very tall and very, very thin.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as long as that doesn't do anything, we'll go ahead and we'll see you guys next week.
We'll see you.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/defendmedia.